Third hour of Darren and Donick here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick here with you on this glorious Wednesday afternoon. Hope everybody's having a great day. It'll be Friday afternoon in Columbus, Ohio, Nationwide Arena. Usually we're talking about the Predators and the Blue Jackets at Nationwide Arena. On Friday, we'll be talking about the 2-seed Vols going up against the 15-seed Colgate, and that'll tip around 1:45 our time on Friday. And to help us with the Vols opponent, he is Colgate's play-by-play man. Eric Malinowski is on the line with us. Eric, how you doing?
Good afternoon, guys. How are you?
Are you up in Columbus? How are things in Ohio?
We're not in Ohio yet. I'm actually outside the bus at Cotterell Court in Hamilton, New York. We're about to get on the bus and then take the hour trek to Syracuse. We'll fly out of Syracuse, and it should be a short flight to Columbus. So we're not there yet. We're going to be there in a couple hours, though.
Well, you blew our cover, Eric. We were going to try to quiz the audience, you know, honor code, whether they knew the answer. But to know the town that Colgate was in, I have been to Colgate. my dad was a athletic director and coach at a small college in New York, and we traveled to Hamilton, New York, to play Hamilton College, and then Colgate in a back-to-back. And my dad was the women's basketball coach. It did not go well in either one of those games. But that's been a long time. But we were going to see how many people in the audience knew exactly where Colgate was located.
Sometimes I forget, to be quite honest.
So Colgate has done what you're supposed to do, right, toward this time of year. You're supposed to be playing your best ball. They're coming in on an 11-game winning streak. Talk about how Colgate has ended their season to put them to this point.
Yeah, it's rarefied air for Colgate since they haven't been here since 1996, and when they were middle of the pack in the Patriot League after they lost to Boston University here in Hamilton. It looked kind of bleak, even though the expectations were high. It was a very competitive league this year in the Patriot League. I know I hate the cliche that anybody could win the league, but this year after Bucknell graduated some of their studs, everybody kind of was fighting for that top spot. Jordan Burns, their star player, was injured. He missed 5 games, and they really struggled during that stretch. He came back, even though he wasn't at 100%. I think after that loss to Boston at home, their only loss at home this season, things just kind of clicked, and that's what propelled them onto that win streak. And in a tournament like this, where it's basically an extended regular season, you don't go anywhere. If you have the top seed, you host every single game at your gym, and I think that helps a lot. Last year, Colgate was the 2 seed. They had to go to Soika Pavilion in Lewisburg, Pennsylvania to play Bucknell, and they got blown out. This year, Bucknell had to come here, and Colgate was the better team. So getting that top spot, going on that 8-game win streak to finish out the regular season, it was so big for Colgate, and the fact that they got to host the Patriot League tournament, and that certainly helped them get to the NCAA tournament for the first time since Donald Foyle led the team there in 1996.
Wow. So tell us a little bit about the Raiders. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and pretend in Nashville I've been able to break down your all's games this season. So we're kind of curious what Tennessee is going to be looking at on Friday. Tell us a little bit about this Colgate team.
Yeah, on a smaller scale, they're very good. They did play some big conference teams. Probably the best team they played was Syracuse. Syracuse, obviously, an 8 seed and not anywhere near the scale that Tennessee is so far this year. But they're a team that's led by the Patriot League Player of the Year, Raplis Ivanauskas. Now, Ivanauskas is an interesting story because it wasn't even a certainty that he was going to play before the season. He had to be cleared by the NCAA. He was a kid that went to Northwestern, highly recruited, and then he just had the injury bug hit him for the first couple years. So he was looking where to go, and Colgate, luckily, was the school that he chose, and Raplis Ivanauskas became the Patriot League Player of the Year. Jordan Burns, a kid from San Antonio, Texas, who took a prep year in the Northeast, he ended up coming to Colgate, and he has been a stud. I mentioned earlier that when he got injured, the team struggled. He's the point guard that leads the team in threes, leads the team in assists, and he broke a Patriot League title record with 35 points. He can take a game over. He's still not 100%, but boy, he does have those flashes where he can take a game over. And then everybody's kind of forgotten about Will Raymond, who is already knocking on the door of 1,400 points for his career. He is, a perennial player on the Patriot League, all teams, whether it be the second or the first. And he struggled a little bit, and he'll admit it, in the beginning stages of the season to kind of mesh with Rapolis Ivanauskas, since he wasn't getting as many touches as he did when Rapolis wasn't on the team. But Will's come on. He's played great. He made the Patriot League All-Tournament team. So those are the big three. The big men are Malcolm Registered and Dana Bath. Combined, they'll get you probably 10, 12 points a game, and rebounding has been a little issue for the big men, but that's where Rapolis Ivanauskas has come in this year. And then they got a great freshman, Patriot League Rookie of the Year, Tucker Richardson. Tucker Richardson, a kid from Flemington, New Jersey, who played a year at Blair Academy. He's come in, and the one thing about his stat line, guys, you just see it across the board. Points, assists, rebounds, the assist-to-turnover ratio is great for a freshman. He's got over 100 assists, so his all-together game is what really impresses me. So I don't know if Nashville wanted to know that much about Colgate.
Oh, they do.
A little bit of a role there, so I just went with it.
Oh, that was a great scouting report. Eric Malinowski is the play-by-play voice of the Colgate Raiders. Now, Eric, I'm going to ask this. When I was growing up, it was the Red Raiders for Colgate. When did it become just the Raiders?
I think I've been doing this since 2002, 2003 season, and I think it was the year after I came here. So I came here, and it was the Raiders, which I thanked everybody involved, because once you start saying Red Raiders or any kind of nickname for a year or two, it kind of sticks in the head. And the other play-by-play guy that was doing hockey, I know he always got flack from the administration for continually saying Red Raiders because he was doing it for the 10 years. But, yeah, it was changed to Raiders, I want to say, in 2000 or 2001. And I don't know much of the backstory about it. I think it was a politically correct thing. That's why they changed it from Red Raiders to Raiders. And, yeah, it's been the Colgate Raiders ever since, although I will still see on game notes here and there when we play a bigger school, I'll still see the Colgate Red Raiders on there instead of the Colgate Raiders.
Huh. So you mentioned hockey, Eric, and here we are in Nashville, Tennessee, with the booming hockey market now. We've learned a lot, and over the years you start to pick up who the good college programs are, and Colgate has had a really good hockey program for a long time. So what's that dynamic like to the basketball alongside of the hockey throughout the winter months?
Yeah, I think the pecking order has always been, I think at one point hockey was on top, but then I think as football, even though they're FCS and not FBS, Division I AA back in the day, Division I A. Football, I think, has kind of leapfrogged everyone because they've had so much national success and then going to the title game back in 2003, but upsets of James Madison in the last couple of years has propelled them. So I know football, different season, but I'd propel them above hockey. And then Colgate men's hockey, even though that they've been struggling in the past couple of seasons and just trying to find that right dynamic, even though they had a goaltender, Colton Point, who was in the Dallas Stars organization. They just, they've struggled the last couple of years. Still, though, when you mention Colgate, the first thing that comes to mind, at least in the winter months, is men's hockey. I think it's one of those sports for Colgate. Men's basketball, let's be honest, I mean, it's a million and one odds that they would ever win the national title. Colgate men's hockey, the hockey dynamic is small enough where you've seen schools like Union, you've seen smaller schools have success in Division I men's hockey, where you could take a small university like Colgate and have a shot to win the true NCAA title, not Division I AA or anything like that. So I think that's why men's hockey is still ranked above to at least the locals as far as hockey and basketball is concerned.
When the draw came out, did you guys think you would be higher than a 15, or was 15 in the ballpark of what you thought you were going to get?
I think going in, a couple of the coaches were saying, well, if Georgia State loses, if a couple of other teams lose, and then the teams like UT Arlington, who didn't have a great record, we could possibly climb up to a 14. But if those things didn't happen, looking at the resumes of the 16th seeds, we were definitely confident. Colgate was definitely confident that they wouldn't be in a play-in game. And then as they started to see things shape up, they were confident that they wouldn't be a 16th seed. So 15th seed was pretty much the thought. And then a bunch of things have to happen if they're going to sneak into a 14th seed. And that's kind of where the chips fell, is the 15th seed. And I don't know what it was, but all the projections we saw was Columbus, Ohio all the way. So we kind of knew that our destination, we were going from Hamilton, New York weather to not much warmer weather in Columbus, Ohio. We didn't have to pack the shorts for Jacksonville or anything like that.
Well, we go to Columbus every year. With the Nashville Predators, I can tell you that it indeed can be very cold at Columbus, but it is a beautiful arena, and you guys are going to have a great time. There's a lot of great places surrounding the arena, great places to hang out before and after games for your fans going down there, so I think it's going to be a great experience.
Can't wait. I know the team is very excited, and you know they're busy preparing, so you know, rarefied air for Colgate men's basketball, and I can't wait to see the city of Columbus.
Eric, we can't wish you good luck, but we can tell you thanks for joining us.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Really appreciate the visit. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you, guys.
Eric Malinowski, he is the Colgate play-by-play man. They will go up against Tennessee on Friday afternoon. It'll be about 1:45-ish hour time, tipping in Nationwide Arena. 2 seed versus the 15 seed.
So remember the name, Rapalus Ivanauskas.
Yeah.
Player of the year in the league.
Transfer from Northwestern.
Shoots the three very well, 43%. In fact, this is a good shooting team. You look at their shooting percentages. It's very, very good from two and from three. And Ivanauskas not only can shoot the three, but he can work inside at 6'10". Gets to the free throw line a lot, too. So Ivanauskas versus the Tennessee front line, which isn't real big other than Alexander. You know, when they go small and they have Schofield and Williams in there, and I, you know who I was impressed with? Who's the other guy? The guy that comes off the bench for Tennessee. All of a sudden, I'm blanking on his name. Not big Kyle Alexander. He's a key guy. But the other guy, Fulkerson, is that his name? Played really well against Kentucky. Made some nice plays. So he might get some assignments on Ivanauskas.
We're going to learn. We talked to Belmont guard Michael Benkert. Of course, Belmont and Maryland will do battle tomorrow. We'll learn a little bit more about the Terrapins coming up at the bottom of the hour. More of Darren and Donick next on 102.5 The Game. Hey, don't forget, the Game Bracket Challenge is back. Time is ticking. Sign up and play for your chance to win great prizes. Also, if you get that perfect bracket, you could win $1 million. Now that all the teams have been selected, you know the brackets are out. You know the seeds, where everybody's located. All the action begins tomorrow. Go to thegamenashville.com, fill out your bracket, and compete for chances to win great prizes. The Game Bracket Challenge brought to you by Sudden Service, where we were up in Gallatin on Monday. We had a good time there. And Volunteer Hose and Gasket. We joked about Vontaze Burfict getting cut by the Bengals on Monday. And I joked and said, well, it would make a lot of sense for his next home to be the Raiders, because that just is what you expect out of the Raiders.
The Colgate Raiders?
Not the Colgate Raiders, the Oakland for now Raiders. And guess where Burfict signed?
The Raiders?
The Raiders. And the only reason I knew that is because a couple of listeners tweeted me last night and said, you nailed it! And I was like, what? I didn't even know.
Whoops.
I think I was just, you know, flippantly saying that because I was more making fun of the Raiders, right? Because that's what the Raiders and Bengals do. And I said, you could throw the Jets in there too, and you used to be able to throw the Browns in there, but the Browns have kind of changed a little bit of that image for the time being, and the Jets spent a ton of money, so I don't think he's going to New York, and they acquired a lot of money at that position. So the Raiders just made sense, and sure enough, he went to the Raiders. We just talked about Tennessee and Colgate playing in Columbus. Today, they're doing something in Columbus on the campus at Ohio State. Today is their pro day, the Buckeyes pro day. So maybe everybody watching the number one pick overall. I don't believe it's going to be Kyler Murray. They can keep throwing that stuff out there. I don't believe for a minute it's going to be Murray. You would think you would take Bosa, right? I mean, a lot of people have said for a year or two that Nick was better than Joey. And if Joey went third overall and Nick is better, and I don't know if that's changed because of the injury and, you know, him sitting out the rest of the year. I don't know, but I have to believe Nick is going to be a top three pick. So Buckeyes Pro Day is today. As, oh, by the way, the draft inches a little bit closer. We're just over a month away from everything being right here. The chaos, the craziness.
It's going to be crazy. Now, did you see the comments by Le'Veon Bell about one Ben Roethlisberger, the topic of the offseason, it seems like, in the whole Steeler situation, right? Did you see these?
No.
Well, we've talked about this a lot with Antonio Brown's situation and now Bell signing with the Jets. Here is the quote. You tell me what you think of this. The organization wants to win. Mike Tomlin wants to win. Ben wants to win, but Ben wants to win his way. That's tough to play with. Ben won a Super Bowl, but he won when he was younger. Now he's at this stage where he tries to control everything, and the team let him get there. So if I'm mad at a player and I'm not throwing him the ball, if I'm not throwing AB the ball and I'm giving Juju Smith-Schuster all of the shine, or Jesse James or Vance McDonald or whoever it is, and you know consciously you're making your other receiver mad, but you don't care, it's hard to win that way.
There is no doubt in my mind that my belief, my opinion, Ben Roethlisberger went to management in the offseason and told Pittsburgh, it's either him or me. One of us has got to go. Somebody's got to go. So you make the choice, but I'm not doing this again next season. Here's an idea for Antonio Brown. If you rely on one person to get you the ball, you might want to treat him a little bit better. How about that? Maybe don't blow up at him all the time on the sidelines and scream at him all the time. You know,
but now you have
a
series of players.
That guy kind
of
controls your fate.
But you have a series of players from the Steelers who have not backed Roethlisberger.
Well, there's no doubt that there's issues with Roethlisberger, right? His leadership has been in question for a good while, right? I mean, this stuff has been out there for a long time. People questioning his leadership or lack of.
Bell said in this Sports Illustrated interview that Roethlisberger's presence wasn't the only factor in his wanting to leave, but that, yes, it was a factor. He added that he wished he had a more open, more genuine, more real relationship with Roethlisberger. So Roethlisberger now has made his bed. If there was a
this
him or me,
I don't understand,
now he gets
Willie.
To play without Bell
okay.
and without Brown.
Help me with this. This is what I don't get. So now you've had the second Steeler, the second star Steeler come out and give this whole, you know, they don't know me, we're not close, the organization doesn't know me, Ben doesn't know me, we don't do anything. Am I missing something? Around the league, is Tom Brady close with everybody in New England? Is he chummy other than Julian Edelman? Because that kind of was creepy.
Yeah, I doubt Tom Brady's going to parties with Gronk.
Right.
I can't see himself doing that.
Am I missing? I mean, are all the star? Does Drew Brees hang out with all the Saints players on offense, and they're all boys and they all hang out and they're going to watch, you know, the NFL draft together? I mean, I didn't know that was a big deal. What am I missing there? I didn't know you had to be chummy with each other and you had to hang all the time, at least on the football side. I mean, other sports, it's different because you're around each other so much more. The seasons are way longer and you travel together, hockey and baseball and basketball. You can go away for 10 days together. So there's a lot more bonding, in my opinion, in those sports than in football. Football, you have the longest off season. Now, because of the new CBA, you're away a lot from each other. You go away for months. The season is not – you come to practice, you go to meetings, and you split. I mean, where is this big bonding in football, where the NFL, the running back and the star receiver and the quarterback, they need to go to dinner every night and go hang out at each other's house and send each other Christmas cards.
Yeah, but I don't think it has to go that far to have a
good,
solid,
professional relationship. But that's kind of the vibe you get from Bell and Brown. Like, Big Ben didn't even know us, and Steelers didn't know us. What?
What's interesting to me is the Steelers have had the reputation through the years of having the type of organization everybody envies, right?
Right. They were praised.
Winning over time, building through the draft, making the right decisions, paying the right guys, letting the other guys go. And then here this is. And from afar, you just ask yourself, how did it get to this? You had one of the best trios production-wise in football, Roethlisberger, Brown, and Bell. And now you have all this fallout. It's just mystifying. And Bell basically says it. He goes, it's not all on Ben. It's not all on AB. And it's not all on me. There's different things that are all factoring in here. But it's a shame. They were pretty good with those three guys. They couldn't beat the Patriots, but they won a lot of games. What's next for them?
Well,
for all these guys?
Like, Willie, in fairness,
is Brown going to be better off where he is? Is Bell going to be better off with the Jets?
Who has a better three-headed monster
gonna
than that? Give me a better three-headed monster than that.
I don't know if
there is one. They should win a lot of games. I mean, that's
my point. Now
it's a
they're
pretty
all
nasty
now they're
three-headed
all,
monster.
Now they're all in three different teams. So are the Steelers better off? Is Ben Roethlisberger better off? Is Bell better off? Is Brown better off? You know, it's like the band breaks up.
Yeah.
They all, hey, well, I'm a solo act, you know.
And we're going to find out. We're going to find out how they work in the solo act. And we're going to find out how they look now that the band is not together and they're off all doing their own thing. Not everybody, right, goes off and has the solo career and they have the same fame or even more fame than when the band was together. My guess is it is not going to play out for Bell and Brown the way they think it is.
Yeah, and I agree because I think Big Ben has already proven that. When he lost Antonio Holmes, he got AB, and then he moved on and got AB once Hines Ward retired, and then he kind of moved on from that. So he's already proven that he can move on without those big wide receivers. So he's going to have to do it again, and now Juju is going to be his Antonio Brown.
And we'll find out if Juju is ready to be the guy now that Brown is not around. It's great when there's all this attention on 84, but now that 84 has left the building, is Juju ready to have defenses focus on him, and will his numbers look the same? Chris Mason joins us at 1 o'clock for his weekly chat with us. Craig Smith, Predators forward, at 1:30. We'll come back and learn a little bit more about the Terrapins. Belmont's next opponent tomorrow, but first I want to talk to all the men out there. Been telling you for years about my friends over at Cool Springs MD, and they know a lot of you men out there have started to seek help for hormone deficiencies and imbalances. And Dr. Jeffrey Lodge is front and center with that. He's the board-certified physician. His wife, Daphne, the registered nurse, and their experienced staff want to give you men out there the treatments that are required to improve your quality of life. And who doesn't want that as we all get older? Their services have already helped a lot of you in the Middle Tennessee area with improving your immune systems, which is always important, your energy levels, always important, your cognitive function, and so much more. They're there to connect you with the medical care that you require to have a healthy and enriched life. If you want to achieve that healthy lifestyle, what are you waiting for? Make that appointment right now. Dial this number, 615-660-6900. That's 660-6900. Or visit their website, coolspringsmd.com. Coming up at 1:30, we'll talk to Predators forward Craig Smith. We'll ask him, can the Badgers of Wisconsin get it done against the Ducks of Oregon out in San Jose? Of course he's going to say Wisconsin, but I'm going to ask him for a real, honest opinion.
Do you think he knows five players on the Badgers basketball team?
I have faith that Smitty does.
I'm not sure.
No?
I think we've known Smitty for a while. I don't know if he is all in.
He's dialed in.
I mean, he's going to root for him. That's his school. He's going to all over. I don't know if he can tell you a whole lot about the team. Understandably.
Well, I've got faith that he knows.
Okay. Okay. We'll
Our
test
next
him.
Guest knows about Maryland, so let's talk to him. Jeff Ehrman is on the line, Inside Maryland Sports, 24/7 Sports to be exact. Jeff, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Well, we're doing fantastic. Belmont got their first ever tournament win last night. They beat Temple. We talked to one of their players last hour, and we know the Terrapins are up next, so we're trying to learn a little bit more about the Terrapins. So what can you tell us about this Maryland basketball team?
Well, I guess the main few things you need to know are, you know, Bruno Fernando is their star, 6'10", sophomore center, was first team All Big Ten, one of the top rebounders in the country. So he's going to be always be the key to their success. Otherwise, it's a really young team, fifth or sixth youngest in the country. They do have some experience because of Fernando. He played a lot last year, and Anthony Cowan, their junior point guard. Otherwise, though, they play a lot of freshmen and sophomores. It's a team that started off the season really strong, 7-1 in the Big Ten, and then kind of leveled off and lost 8 of their last 14 games. So they're trying to regain their momentum after a really bad loss to Nebraska in the first round of the Big Ten tournament. And, you know, it's a team that missed the tournament last year and went 1-done the year before in the tournament. So they're looking for their first postseason win in 3 years.
Yeah, that's exactly where I was going. They got off to the hot start. They got off to the good start in conference play. Then it was kind of win a couple, lose a couple, win one, lose one. Went and just kind of back and forth. So what caused that? Was it the competition increased or did they kind of sputter down the stretch because things kind of changed on their end?
I think it was two things. The competition did get tougher. The Big Ten, obviously, most people think is the toughest conference in the country this year. In the second half of the season, they had Michigan twice. You had Michigan State. So the schedule did get tough, and it's a young team. You know, when you're playing that many freshmen, you're bound to have some inconsistency. So I think it was those things along with, you know, a couple lingering issues, primarily the turnovers. Turnovers have been a huge issue for them all season. And that's definitely something to watch tomorrow.
I want to ask you, what were the thoughts, you know, just around the conference? You just mentioned some team. It was a little surprising. We talked about it on Monday. I was surprised Michigan State didn't get a one seed. I mean, how do you have the Big Ten regular season champ and the tournament champ not get the number one seed? And we were surprised. Were you surprised?
I was a little surprised by that. I think they had a little bit of a funk during the season when they had, you know, those two Indiana losses and the Illinois loss. I think that really hurt them. You know, obviously they were going through some injuries at the time. I was surprised, though, given how much respect is being given to the Big Ten this year. But as we all know, Tom Izzo can get it done this time of year regardless of his seed.
Yeah, you've seen all these teams all year long. If you had to choose one that passes your eye test – the best in the Big Ten, which team would it be throughout the course of this season?
You know, I still like Michigan just because they've gotten it done lately. You know, it's hard to doubt Beilein. You know, before that Big Ten championship game loss, he had won, I think it was 12 Big Ten tournament games in a row. They seem to go to the Final Four every other year. Clearly the cream of the crop, though, is them and Michigan State. I wouldn't be surprised if either one of them make a run. Otherwise, I think the conference is mostly strong in its depth. You know, it has a lot of teams that could go win a game or two. I don't think there's a lot of teams, even Purdue, which won the regular season title. I think they overachieved. So I don't think there's a lot of teams with the potential for a long run, the Elite Eight or Sweet 16, but I would say Michigan and Michigan State.
Jeff Ehrman is our guest. He's with 24/7 Sports. He covers the Maryland Terrapins. And so, Jeff, what do you think about the specific matchup to Belmont? I don't know if you watched their game last night, but it's really intriguing to me. You take a big guy like Muzinski, who had a great game last night, you know, classic post player, and you put him up against a guy like Bruno Fernando, great active shot blocker. That to me is where you start in terms of the matchup.
Yeah, that is where you start. And, you know, Wendler had a quiet game last night, but they showed that they have several other guys who can step up. So I think it's going to be, you know, size and strength against pace and spread offense. Obviously, Belmont lights it up. Three-point range in general, second highest scoring team in the country. So Maryland really needs to focus on getting back in defense and I would think slowing the game down. They clearly don't want to get into a running match.
Oftentimes, I still have to remind myself that Maryland is not in the ACC, they're in the Big Ten. What do you think the transition has been like for the school? Do they like that they're in the Big Ten after a couple of years here?
I think people have mostly gotten used to it. It's been better for basketball than football, obviously. You know, when they're in the ACC, those were the golden years of the ACC. Where Duke and Carolina were great every year, as they are right now, but then you had a lot of other teams that were really good at that time. So, you know, that's helped them at least success-wise. I don't think people consider the brand of basketball as fun to watch. And some would tell you that's more on the, based on the coach than the conference, but that's a different story. You know, football-wise, it's been a challenge, just obviously because that's the Big Ten East is absolutely ridiculous in terms of competition. But, you know, long story short, I think some of the older fans still kind of hold a grudge about it, but most people have pretty much gotten over it.
You mentioned the pace of play, and I'm just looking at the KenPom rankings. The tempo, 274 for Memphis.
Yeah.
Average possession length, 301. In other words, they're going to hold it a little bit longer. So you're saying that has become sort of something that people have honed in on when they struggle?
Yeah, that's, you know, they went from a coach in Gary Williams who liked to press and run all the time to Mark Turgeon who really likes to have a deliberate offense and move the ball, wait for the best shot, which results sometimes in a lot of late shot clock shots or turnovers. So that is his style. You know, he's deliberate. He's focused on defense. He doesn't like to run too much or press really at all. And that's just, you know, in his coaching DNA.
Yeah, and they do have outstanding defensive numbers. I think that's a really interesting matchup is Maryland's defense against Belmont's offense. And so I think that is going to be really intriguing. I think it's going to be a fun game to watch go down.
Yeah, that is a really good matchup, and, you know, I think clearly there's a reason why it's, what, a four-point spread, I think I saw. You know, it's all, everyone's giving Belmont a chance. Seems like they're one of the most popular upset picks of the whole first round, so, you know, it should be one of the better games, I would think.
You brought up Mark Turgeon, and he's there in his eighth season. How do they feel? Because, you know, we were used to Maryland every year. I mean, you said there were some really big years with Gary Williams. How have they felt with his body of work over eight seasons, in your opinion?
I think that, you know, it's gone up and down, a little more down lately just because, you know, people are wanting more. They're wanting to make a postseason run, and that just hasn't happened, you know, especially in either tournament, to be honest. In the Big Ten tournament, they've lost in the first round the past 3 years. So you combine that with the NCAAs, they've lost five postseason games in a row. One Sweet 16 a few years ago in his 8 years. So it really kind of feels like this is the boiling point this week, you know, for a lot of fans. They want to see, you know, with this team that played really well for much of the season, has the potential, has a really, really good draw, a charitable draw, I would say, compared to most of the other teams with their seed. Fans really want to see him do something now.
It'll be interesting to see how it all plays out tomorrow afternoon. Jeff, appreciate the visit. Thanks for doing this.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
All right. That is Jeff Ehrman, covers Maryland for 24/7 Sports. And it is interesting. Since Turgeon's been there, eight seasons, one run to the Sweet 16. That's it. They've only been in the tournament. This is their fourth time in 8 years. And
sounds like the Natives are getting restless.
The other three, one and done. They just, you know, they haven't done anything. They've, like I said, they've won two games in the tournament, and that's it.
Shows you the expectations, though, yeah, of that program, because four out of eight NCAA tournament, that's pretty good. That's not a bad batting average when you get down to it, but Maryland, they expect more, and especially if in those four tournaments, they've only had one really good performance in the tournament.
Maryland had a very memorable game here in Nashville in a first-round game.
Oh, yeah. I was
many,
at
many
that
years
game.
Ago.
Oh, that was a long time ago. That was when was they were the defending champs.
2000? Is that right?
2003.
2003?
Yeah. That was way back.
Buzzer beater.
Yeah. The guy, Drew Nicholas, dribbled the length of the court and hit a three and then went into the tunnel near the Lexus Lounge, yep. I think is where the Lexus Lounge. Of course, the Lexus Lounge wasn't
was
there
not
at
the
time.
Lexus Lounge
just went right down
there.
The tunnel down then. But against UNC Wilmington.
Yep.
But I think this is going to be this is one of those matchups where what is Belmont's weakness? Defense. What is Maryland's weakness? Offense. So it's the weak suit versus weak suit on one side, then strong suit, Maryland's defense, which is excellent. Great shot blockers, get after it. They hold you down against Belmont's very efficient offense. So who can win the matchup on both ends of the court? I think it's a great matchup in that respect.
Back to wrap up the third hour of Darren and Donick on this Wednesday. Next. I brought up the NFL draft earlier. By the way, Chris Mason coming up at 1 o'clock. You know, they did announce some of the musical acts that will be here. Of course, it's going to be a 3-day festivity in our town where you can see, and I was reading that Dierks Bentley is going to headline the final night, a big concert for the NFL draft. And that'll be at the, I think that's going to be at the Music City Center. No, he will perform on the lower Broadway stage at the conclusion of the draft on Saturday. Also, Tim McGraw will join him and headline the Friday night concert. CeCe Winans, I think, is going to do the anthem to get everything started. I think you'll all see, also see Charles Esten out there. It's a pretty good lineup. I've got to be honest. I thought being in Nashville, I thought there would be a little bit more flair to it. I mean, 3 days. I figured there would be a couple of, whoa. I mean, nothing against those acts. Certainly those are big names, but I figured that's going to be a gigantic stage downtown, right? They're talking about over 300,000 people for 3 days in our city. Downtown's going to be a mess. We know the marathon is going on Saturday morning. I just figured, you know, we would be kind of knocked, have to sit down. We were like, whoa, okay, with a couple of the acts, but, you know. Maybe they're holding a couple of cards back.
You never know. Never know.
Nothing wrong with Tim
McGraw. Could be some late entries.
Or Dierks Bentley. CeCe Winans. Nothing wrong with that. Chip Esten. Loved him in Nashville. But, you know, I just thought, it's Music City, USA, man.
That's a good start, though. That's a good.
Well, is it a start or is that the finish?
Well, I don't know. I think that's, if that's all you had, there's nothing wrong with that. That's
I mean, Darren, who do you want? That's the question.
Yeah. Who's missing in that for you? I mean, Tim McGraw.
Well, I mean,
Dierks Bentley, those are,
let's just go
list.
Down Broadway alone. You've got what? Kid Rock. Who owns bars? Yeah, Kid Rock.
Luke
you
Bryan.
Got Luke Bryan. I mean, you got all
I
these.
Think Kid Rock is probably.
Every artist in town owns a bar downtown. Can't they just plop out of their bar and go sing?
Jason Aldean?
I mean, there's tons. I mean, look at our city. It's littered everywhere. Big time musicians. I mean, you hear Aerosmith is here all the time. All the time. Like, that gets your attention, right?
So you're looking for non-country. Is that what you're saying? You're looking for more of a variety of genres?
I'm not saying I'm looking for non-country. I get it. And I guess you want to showcase that because that is – but there's a lot of big – I mean, remember we did a charity event over in Green Hills many, many years ago. And when we were done, it was a baseball charity. It was for Nashville RBI, I believe. And we had Buster Olney and David Price and Tim Corbin. And it went on and on, right?
Yeah.
Chuck Merriweather. And when it was over, the owners of the place we were in Green Hills, they're like, hey, go check out the bar. We walk in there.
Right.
Robert Plant is just sitting at the bar.
He was just sitting
like,
right there.
Robert Plant is sitting in the bar in Green Hills.
So you want Led Zeppelin to play. Is that what you're saying?
I'm just saying, that's Nashville, right? You can just walk into a bar in Green Hills, and there's Robert Plant sitting there at the bar.
Performing, Dierks Bentley and Led Zeppelin will be playing.
I just thought there would be a little bit more...
variety of acts?
A little bit more...
different musical genres?
Just kind of cover a lot of ground. It's not just... country music here. Yes, that's the big, but there's a lot of huge artists in this town. Huge that do other genres of music.
So you'd like to beef it up a little bit.
Remember when we did a show at the Wild Horse around the Music City Bowl? And you don't remember this because it was me, because at the time I was doing the 2 o'clock hour solo.
Okay.
And I go to the break, and this young lady comes up to me and says, yes, I'm here to do my interview. And I'm like, I don't have anything scheduled for this is a sports talk show.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, and I go, and so I didn't know, she didn't say who she was. And I go, it's the break, so I had to go to the restroom. I go run to the restroom of the Wild Horse, and I see a big, gigantic poster right outside the men's bathroom. showcasing this person is singing, the person that just walked up to the table and said, hey, I'm here to do the interview. And I said, who is Taylor Swift?
You didn't do the interview?
No, I didn't. This
what
was
were
back,
you thinking?
Willie, this is back at the beginning. Nobody, this was at the very beginning of Taylor Swift.
I met her.
She was living in Hendersonville.
Yeah, I met her at one of those 4th of July things. Remember we used to have to do the 4th of July celebration on the riverfront?
Yes.
Yes. Have to. You know,
we emceed
thousands
it.
Of thousands.
Right, before the fireworks.
Yeah, we would introduce acts and stuff. I met her backstage and I was
nice to meet you.
No, I had no idea.
And she had no idea of you.
Well, she
you
wasn't
had no
who
idea
she
of her.
Right. She had not blossomed. She was just starting.
Yes.
But she was on the radar and people were like, you need to pay attention to her. I was like, oh, that's nice.
I called somebody and I said, have you heard of Taylor Swift? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, well, she just came up to me and asked if I was ready to do the interview. I have no idea who she is.
Hmm.
I said, this is what?
That was probably 15 years, easy.
This was before 15? What? Kentucky and Clemson? Yeah, this is like 15 years ago. Something
maybe
like that.
Maybe 12 years ago.
Maybe
12.
Yeah, maybe. Oh, it's
something.
Definitely more than a decade.
2000 something, yeah.
It's like, who's Taylor Swift? Jason.
That's funny you had that, because that was the same experience I had.
And if I didn't see the poster.
Behind the big stage on the river.
Right. If I didn't see the poster, I would have had no clue. She never introduced who she was.
Okay, so you want Taylor Swift to play at the draft.
No, I'm just saying there's those stories everywhere in this city. Jason, what's up?
Hello?
Jason,
hello,
you're
Jason. Is this Jason Aldean?
Yeah. No. We could only wish to be in Nashville come to the draft, but yeah, I'm very disappointed in the lineup I'm hearing. And last time I heard Derek Bentley sing at a sporting event, it was the Predators playoff game last year. It was awful for the national anthem, and we lost that night.
It's a bummer for those artists, right? They get the gig.
So you're holding him responsible, Jason, for that.
Yeah.
He is a legit fan, though. You got to. He's been at more games than just the one he sang at. But I think in talking to some of the people, they all feel like, man, number one, I got to sing well. And number two, if they lose, you feel responsible, even though you have absolutely nothing to do with the game. Like, oh, but we lost so-and-so's game when he sang or she sang. And then if you win, they're like, we got to have that person back. Get them back for game 5. You know, there's always that superstition running rampant.
Well, you think the artist would came out for this major thing in Nashville, and it just don't look good for us to, even if it's the Super Bowl down the road, if we ever got the stadium, you think Garth Brooks or Al Dean or, you know, somebody else that would show up to kick it off. You know, I mean, it's just.
Yeah, I don't have any problems, Jason, with this list. I just wanted more to the list, and thank you for the phone call.
You just want to add.
Look, let's be perfectly honest.
Well, this is what we found out.
Willie, this is the second biggest stage the NFL has in the calendar year outside of their Super Bowl, is it not?
It is.
This is their second biggest stage in the calendar year for the sport in our city, and so that is a gigantic stage. And I'm just saying I expected there to be. Now, maybe there is more. I'm not jumping to conclusions. Maybe
still got time.
They're going to come out with some more. You know, I'm just saying when I first saw it, I was like, wow, okay, but that's it. That's it? I mean,
what we found out at the All-Star, the NHL All-Star weekend is there's plenty of times, there's plenty of venues, different sizes. So there's room for a lot of acts, a lot of different musical genres. Doesn't have to be all country. So I think they prove that, you know, you can use a lot more than just the names that you mentioned, just from a numbers standpoint, right? Like you want A-listers, you want B, you want C, you want them to be hitting at the right times. You know, some people just like watching people they don't even know perform because they're good. Like, who are these guys? They're great musicians.
You can have stuff like the marathon, you know, where every mile.
Yeah.
You could have acts. I mean, we just talked about this yesterday when Marquise was doing. Three Doors Down lives in town. I get it. Everybody's got their own schedule. And, you know, who knows where. Maybe there was a ton of people that they wanted and they were off doing their own thing. I get it. You have to make things work for their schedule. But I just expected there to be kind of like a long list of, okay, you know, this night and on this stage, and oh, they'll be followed up by this, and that'll lead up to this act. I was like, wow, okay, all right.
Well, plus you got to cater to every audience that's at the NFL draft too. Not everybody
not
listens
everybody
to
is country.
Bentley. Yeah.
Right. Not everybody's country. Everybody that's coming, they're coming from all over. And we have, yes, country's huge, but we have a huge variety in this town of musicians from all, I mean, so you could really appease everybody if you really wanted to. And maybe they are. Maybe there's more to come. We'll come back, fourth and final hour. Chris Mason to kick things off. C-Mace joins us next on 102.5 The Game.